Blog Talk Radio.
From the Blog Talk Radio Studios right here in the heart of Hudson County. You know it, it's Union City. Insider NJ proudly brings to you Politically Direct. And I am, of course, the professor, Fernando Uribe. I want to welcome you all here tonight, the 26th of July, the year 2018. Of course, I hope you're all having an outstanding summer. Of course, I want to thank you all for listening in from wherever you are here in the Garden State. And, of course, to all my friends throughout the U.S. of A. You can write to the show's inbox, ladies and gentlemen, which is politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Once again, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. I welcome your feedback, suggestions for future guests, of course, topics, what you thought of previous episodes, and everything in between, folks. I welcome, again, your participation in the show, and what can I tell you? It's the feedback that has been overwhelmingly positive. I'm grateful to all of my loyal listening audience here, again, in New Jersey, of course, throughout the country, friends scattered all over the USA that listen in every single Thursday night to Politically Direct. Now, don't forget to follow the show on Instagram at PoliticallyDirectNJ. Again, on Instagram at PoliticallyDirectNJ. You can also follow me on Instagram directly at your_Fernando. Appreciate all the likes, the new followers every day, certainly all the views on my stories. I know I like to sort of be very versatile in my stories. I incorporate a lot of political humor, some sports, pro wrestling. I love memes. I post them all the time. They're appropriate, nothing really, you know, nothing scandalous, but they're funny nonetheless, and I appreciate all the views. I keep getting on there. So, again, certainly I'm flattered by the support there online. You can also follow me on Twitter, ladies and gentlemen, at Professor F. Uribe. We're almost at 7,000 followers, so you know what? Keep it coming. Tell your friends to follow me on Twitter as well. A lot of good content there each and every day, not just putting up links for episodes here on Politically Direct, folks, but of course my Wednesday night podcast that I do right here in Hudson County, a local show called Talking the Hudson. And of course, other things I like to talk about on Twitter very briefly. Of course, for all you Facebook subscribers, take a minute, go to the official page for Politically Direct, click the like button, tell your friends to do the same, share it when you can. 500 plus likes and counting, trying to get to 1,000, at least by the end of the month. I think it's a realistic goal, and with your help, I'm sure that I can do that. Now, I do want to hear from you this evening at some point, folks, so it's call in toll-free, 818-572-8032. Once again, toll-free number, 818-572-8032, and our toll-free number is brought to you by Insider NJ. Now, ladies and gentlemen, again, if you're not familiar, don't forget to check out Insider NJ by going to www.insidernj.com for the absolute best coverage of the political scene throughout the state of New Jersey. No one does it better than Insider NJ. So once you go on the main page, click right at the very top to subscribe absolutely free of charge to the Morning Intelligence Briefing delivered conveniently to your inbox each and every morning. It's the best scoops, the most up-to-date information, and really, if you want to be in the know about the political scene here in the Garden State, folks, no one does it better than Insider NJ. Again, check them out, www.insidernj.com. Don't forget to follow them on Twitter, of course, like them on Facebook as well. So it's very simple, folks. Don't forget to start your day with Insider NJ. Again, toll-free number tonight, 818-572 818-572-8032. We'll be taking some calls later in the show. I'm very excited about my guest coming up in just a few moments, and she'll be a delight. Certainly have not had a chance thus far, folks, this week. Insider NJ did release their top millennials list. That's right. Their power list continues to impress statewide. It's the 2018 Insider 100, the Millennials Edition. So I've been very, very grateful to have a few of the honorees on the show thus far. Pete Shenouda, the chairman of the New Jersey College Republicans. Also, of course, Ms. Megan Warner, the executive director of the New Jersey College Democrats. Certainly Matt Rooney, the blogger-in-chief at Save Jersey. Also, a good personal friend of mine is Katie Saracola, the host of the Millennial Minute with Katie Saracola. You can find it online. And happy for her and all of the honorees this year on the Insider NJ Millennial list. And, of course, add one more here on the show. We'll have another honoree on the Millennials Top 100 list here in just a few moments. So stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. Again, www.longtalkradio.com/politicallydirectNJ, folks. Tell people to tune in. They can also tune in by calling the number, the toll-free number. They can listen in via their smartphone, 818-572-8032. I'll take some calls later in the show, certainly. And looking forward to your feedback, not just only about the Millennials list, which is a very interesting list nonetheless, but also tonight's guest as well. You know, I have a question to sort of ask tonight, and I'm hoping that together we'll be able to answer it. But quite frankly, can we get decriminalization right in New Jersey? Quite frankly, I don't know. And that is the subject of my first shot. Folks, you know, one of the things that's interesting to me about the ongoing decriminalization crusade right now in New Jersey is, quite frankly, what's taken so long. And I know that Governor Murphy, when he was candidate Murphy last year, made decriminalization, outright legalization, a very big component of his platform. I've had plenty of guests on since the podcast started earlier this year. I've had Kevin Sabe, if you're not familiar with him, from Smart Approaches to Marijuana. Also having Hugh O'Byrne and Dara Service from the New Jersey Cannabis Industry Association here on the program to really talk about sort of the pros and cons about legalization, sort of the advancements made with decriminalization. I've also had elected officials such as State Senator Ronald Rice and State Senator Loretta Weinberg. And, you know, I've had some very versatile and diverse opinions on this show. And, you know, one of the things that has caught my eye about this, this movement, or at least sort of the progression towards decriminalization is, you know, I've always, you know, as an educator and dealing with college students on a daily basis, I've seen firsthand what marijuana, in the sense of what a marijuana arrest can do to affect the life of a person in New Jersey. And I've talked about it on the program before, and I'll mention it again, it's quite relevant. But before entering academia to go work in higher education, I worked in our criminal justice system, folks, for 10 years. I worked in different agencies, and I can tell you that working with individuals from all backgrounds, I saw firsthand the impact of our antiquated drug laws, specifically as they pertain to marijuana. And to me, what I found interesting, or what I found to be, you know, demoralizing, is the fact that for whatever reason, whether they've been political, economic, or everything else in between, I've been disappointed at sort of not just the narrative here statewide, but nationally about, especially the Justice Department, in their very lethargic and very, you know, sort of very antiquated pace as it pertains to really looking at drug laws, again, as it pertains to marijuana. And, you know, folks, I have to tell you, I mean, the following should not be news to anybody. But black and brown people have been disproportionately arrested for marijuana for as long as I can remember. Okay, I'm over 40, so I remember very vividly the start of the war on drugs. And I remember watching that, you know, in prime time, then-President Ronald Reagan and his wife, the First Lady, the lovely Nancy Reagan, and they both rest in peace. And I remember their crusade about alerting the American public as it pertains to the war on drugs. And of course, we got to know those three famous words that we sort of embedded in our subconscious at a very young age, whether we, you know, took DARE workshops in elementary school and the high school. And all we heard from what I can remember from childhood to adolescence into adulthood is just say no. And, you know, marijuana has always been that recreational drug that not just college students have enjoyed, but adults in general. Now, for the record, I don't smoke marijuana. I never have. I don't care to. It's not something that really interests me. You know, you want to get on my good side, bring over a bottle of wine and tell me, hey, we're going to go on your front porch right now and smoke a nice Cuban cigar. Like that, I'm down. I really don't care about marijuana, to be very honest, folks. Again, having worked in our criminal justice system, I've seen firsthand how oppressive marijuana arrests have been for people of color. Again, black and brown people disproportionately get arrested at higher rates than whites, not just in New Jersey, but throughout the country. And these aren't some made-up statistics, folks. I mean, these are very tangible, quantifiable research. And again, this is not meant to be slanderous or defamatory, but the reality is that the majority of people that are arrested for marijuana tend to be poor people. And what happens is they don't have the resources to hire a good attorney. And they end up going through the system. They end up having to plead guilty. They're either sentenced most likely to probation, sometimes anywhere between 2 to 5 years, pay an exorbitant amount of fines. And if they don't pay their fines, they go back to jail. Well, it's going to be kind of hard to pay their fines if they're not working because no one's going to hire them with a drug arrest. So it just becomes a vicious circle, folks. And again, people of color and poor people overall have just been disproportionately really, you know, at sort of the short end of the stick here when it comes to our marijuana laws. And I'll be very honest, I don't know where I sit on the, you know, sort of ideological spectrum when it comes to outright legalization, but I can tell you that decriminalization is a must. And I applaud State Senator Nicholas Scutari for really trying to fast forward this in the legislature, but it's astounding to me that this has not happened sooner. Creating an enormous amount of money to incarcerate people in New Jersey each and every year for marijuana arrests. Now, listen, let me be very clear. If you're driving and you're trying to, you know, transport pounds upon pounds of marijuana into the trunk of your car, you know, I don't really have any sympathy for you, okay? But if you're caught with a small amount, if you're caught with a joint or rolling paper or, you know, again, I don't know what the number is going to be in terms of what's going to really drive the decriminalization movement, whether it's 10 grams, 20 grams, 30 grams, 40. I don't know that. I don't know who's going to set that standard. I don't know if it's the legislature. I don't know if it's going to be an advisory board that Governor Murphy appoints. I don't know this. But the bottom line is that, you know, having your life ruined, the fact that you're going to, if you're a college student, you're going to lose your right to financial aid and any loans you have will become null and void. You'll be most likely incarcerated. You'll lose the right to vote. All of these actions, you know, again, are direct result of being arrested for marijuana. And quite frankly, folks, it's 2018. You know, there are a lot more serious offenders out there that we have to worry about. And that's where our law enforcement resources and manpower should be dedicated to. Okay. We need to be looking at violent offenders. We need to be looking at commit violent crimes as a result of more serious drug use, whether it's usage of heroin, crystal meth, cocaine. Okay. There's no research that I've ever seen. And I have read about this endlessly where violent crime and marijuana usage are direct correlates of each other. That doesn't exist, folks. Okay, I've never smoked marijuana, but I can tell you from people that have been arrested or smoke marijuana, the last thing they want to do is commit a violent crime. Okay, no one smoking marijuana is going to think about carjacking someone. Anyone smoking marijuana is not thinking about committing a robbery. Okay, with a deadly weapon, that doesn't happen. But yet we continue to incarcerate black and brown people at alarming rates in New Jersey. We're spending millions upon millions of dollars to incarcerate them, to prosecute them, to throw them into the system. Now, to say nothing of the fact that we have to form our criminal justice anyway. But, folks, this is something that's easy. And, folks, this is not AP calculus, okay? It's, you know, it's not complicated. I mean, AP calculus was difficult for me, but, I mean, that's another story. But the reality is that this isn't difficult to comprehend, folks. And I get it that right now there's a bill sitting in Trenton, and I know the legislature is trying to move on it. You know, I hope anyone listening in Trenton right now will hear my cry and say, get this done. We need to decriminalize marijuana. We need to focus on more serious offenders and not penalize working class people, poor people, because that's what these marijuana arrests are doing. So I applaud Attorney General Goral for, you know, putting sort of a moratorium on marijuana arrests until after Labor Day. Good job, but more needs to be done. And I'm hoping that the legislature can really get on this because New Jerseyans deserve better. And that's my first shot. Folks, again, toll-free number tonight, 818-572-8032. Toll-free number, again, brought to you by Insider NJ. And, again, it's 8:15 on the East Coast, and it's my pleasure to welcome to the program for the very first time the youngest councilwoman in New Jersey history and also number 20 on our Insider NJ Millennials to Watch list. I want to welcome to the program tonight Ms. Alyssa K. Dawson. Alyssa, welcome to Politically Direct.
Thank you so much. Excited to be on.
I hope you like did I miss anything in that intro there?
No. That was great.
I appreciate
it. Well, the only thing I make fun of once in a while is when people say there's a little bit of a controversy. People say, am I really elected because I'm filling a vacancy? And, you know, I know there's, you know, some people have said no, some people say yes. I don't really care. I'm just going to go with it and hope that I do get elected in November. And then, you know, there won't be a question from there on.
That's right. And I'm sure you will. You know, Alyssa, and by the way, I also have to say, though, I remember on watching on social media, you have a hell of a jump shot, girl. I'll tell you, I was impressed.
Oh, yeah.
I was watching.
I did play D2 in college. So, you know, that's a little secret passion of mine.
You know what? I'm a bit of a baller myself. You know, I might have to go shoot hoops with you and see, you know, what you got on the floor there. I might have to do that.
I'll play you one-on-one. How's that?
That's fine. We can do that, sure. You know,
right.
Alyssa, one of the things that caught my eye about, you know, not just, you know, your visibility in New Jersey, but really, you know, what you're doing, I think, is really setting an excellent example here in the Garden State for women that want to get involved in our political process. And quite frankly, you're doing it at such a young age, because I remember when I was 24 and I just graduated out of Rutgers University in New Brunswick about a year out. The last thing I was doing was thinking about pursuing elected office. I was thinking about working, paying off my student loans. I was still sort of in this mode of like, I'm not sure what I want to do. And I look at you and you're 24 years old. You're serving on a council seat in one of New Jersey's nicest municipalities. But, you know, this isn't like a flash in the pan. You've been involved in New Jersey politics for a while. What got you motivated to get started at such a young age and sort of keep going consistently?
Yeah. All right. So I'll start off with my, you know, my background. A lot of people, I mean, the people that I know and that I've met along the way obviously know where I started. But for those who don't, I had an internship in Governor Christie's Office of Constituent Relations. The summer going into my senior year of college, which I honestly just applied for over the internet. I said, you know, I've always been interested in it my entire life. But I said, you know, let me see to get an internship. And I applied and I got it. So I did that internship for about 3 months, summer going into my senior year. And it was really that that experience that kind of solidified my interest in, you know, in it, I guess. And what really caught me about interning in that office was that we were really the behind the scenes, you know, people that made things happen. And, you know, you get constituents that call in about, you know, some really crazy issues, some life or death issues. People kind of, you know, sometimes it's their last call. They really don't know where to turn. And it kind of taught me that, you know, yes, you know, people look at politics like you're on camera, you're, you know, out there, you know, doing big things. And I was like, you know, this office really makes a lot of things happen. And not many people even knew, you know, what actually happened there. And so having that experience and dealing with the people, I think really solidified, you know, my desire to go further. From there, after I graduated, which I graduated a semester early, and I decided to email my supervisor from that office. And I said, hey, you know, I just graduated. I'm not sure if there's any openings, but I'd love to come back, you know, for full time if possible. And I was lucky enough that they hired me. And so I spent about a year and a half back in the office where I interned. You know, I dealt with, you know, a lot of Hurricane Sandy victims at that time. We would get, you know, parents. I always tell this story because I think it's a great story. You know, we pick up the phone and say, you know, governor's office, how can I help you? And it was a mother who was calling because her son was a heroin addict and they were having a lot of trouble getting him treatment. So, you know, I took down all her information, you know, made a few calls over to, you know, I think it was the Department of Health or Human Services, and they contacted her. And she actually called back about a week later and said, you know, I just want to say thank you. My son got into a rehab program. And it's things like that that, you know, that was what made the job fun and worth it. And, you know, I really felt like I was making a difference. So I did that for a year and a half. And then from there, I had the opportunity to go join the governor's briefing team, where I kind of just specialized in the lieutenant governor's briefings, which is kind of how my first introduction to her. And then January, February of last year, her scheduler left the office and got a new job. And I was approached and they said, you know, we want to make you the scheduler for the lieutenant governor. It's going to be crazy because she's running. And obviously I knew that at the time. But I jumped right into it head first. And, you know, that was, you know, the time I spent with her was truly my favorite part of my time in Trenton. And I'm sure you've seen, you know, my posts about her and how I basically think the world of her. And, you know, that was really, you know, how things started for me. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry to cut you off. I just wanted to mention, I mean, I've met Kim on a few occasions, and what a stand-up lady. She's so warm and friendly and just delightful to talk to. So, I mean, you know, a lot of people, when they go to work and they have to go work for someone, sometimes we don't always have that advantage of working for someone who's genuinely that nice. But you have that advantage with Kim, and I'm really happy to hear that. Continue, please.
No, I was just going to say, I was going to talk a little bit about her. You know, she is the true definition of a public servant. And that's something that I've tried to distinguish a lot, even in the past few months since I've, you know, taken on the councilwoman role. People think of, you know, government and they think automatically of, you know, politics. You know, it's all games and, you know, there's a lot of fighting and, you know, all that kind of stuff that obviously comes with it. And I like to say, instead of, you know, people saying like, oh, you're in politics, I like to say, you know, I'm in public service, because I truly think that at the end of the day, that's really the job of any elected official, is to obviously represent the people. And I think a lot of people forget that. And I'm happy and I'm proud of myself that, you know, I have started off early and I've started off with that mindset where I'm, you know, rather than get involved in the, you know, the political games, I'm just really trying to focus on the job at hand. And that's something that, you know, every day I spent with Kim Godano, she was that. I mean, answering the phone for anybody who called her, always trying to find solutions to problems, and, you know, really just never lost herself in, you know, in a gubernatorial race that often at times was, you know, a little dramatic. And obviously there was a lot of, you know, claims made against her, and she really just stood her ground. And that's, you know, one of the many reasons I admire her. And, you know, I truly aspire to be just like her.
Well, listen, there's no doubt about the impact that the former lieutenant governor had on your life and your professional development. And I sort of want to sort of dissect that a little bit, because, and I've talked to other guests on this program about Kim, and, you know, I dissected last year to death, and I really don't want to sort of engage in overkill, but, you know, as a homeowner and taxpayer and just someone who was a fan of Kim, I felt awful for her, Alyssa, because I think that last year Kim was fighting such an uphill battle in that race. And, you know, notwithstanding the reality that in New Jersey, you know, Democrats outnumber registered Republicans like by a margin of 3-1. And of course, there's the rest is made up by independents like myself. But I really felt bad for Kim last year. I thought she was fighting an impossible fight. And I don't want to sort of put you on the spot, but, you know, in retrospect, now when you look back, you know, again, and I asked this of Assemblyman Michael Carroll and a few other Republicans in New Jersey, you know, I'm still a little angry with Governor Christie. I think, you know, and I met Chris, nice guy to me. He's a fellow Cowboy fan, so in that regard, you know, I can respect him.
I'm a Jets fan,
Oh, okay, well, that's okay. That's all right.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a sad life, let me tell you.
No, well, yeah, my dad's a diehard Jet fan since 1968, so believe me, I've grown up seeing my father miserable. But, you know, towards the end of his second term, Alyssa, like, I just started developing a lot of, I don't know, just disappointment with Governor Christie, and I think that that was just an impossible type of black cloud that hovered over Kim. And, you know, I think that it just put her at such a disadvantage because last year, you know, we saw what voter turnout was. We saw how poor the turnout was in November. And listen, you know, an election's an election. You know, Phil Murphy won, fine. You know, we move on. We live with it. You know, we sort of deal with his policies now and see what happens. But I just felt that Kim was just at such a huge disadvantage because of, quite frankly, I think Governor Christie's legacy really – really stained her. Is that an inaccurate observation on my part, or is there, am I wrong there, or is there more to this story?
No, so I would say that I agree, and I think that, you know, anybody who had skin in the game would agree that, you know, he obviously just had this shadow that was cast, and unfortunately it was you know, quite a damper on things at times. But from, you know, from an insider perspective, and obviously, you know, I was very much a part of the campaign, and I think that in the looking back, a lot of people say to me now, you know, what if she just, you know, went after him a little bit more, or what if she just, you know, talked about him more and, you know, kind of, you know, tried to separate herself. And at the end of the day, that's one of the reasons that I think, you know, I respect her so much, is that she never, you know, stooped low in that regard. She really tried to just focus on herself, what she could do for New Jersey, and, you know, rather than sit there and say, oh, I'm, you know, I'm not like him, you know, because he's awful, or, you know, there were a lot of opportunities where people would ask her, you know, why won't you just, you know, speak out against him and, you know, be a little more stern, I guess, or, you know, a little more hard hitting. And she never wanted to. And I think that at the end of the day, you can say that he was the reason, but, you know, I think, you know, an election is an election, and obviously, you know, you win some, you lose some. And, but I do agree with your, you know, I think a lot of people just naturally associated her with him. And when they went to the polls, they saw her name, and in their mind, they saw his, and they said, you know, we don't want any more of this. And, you know, it just, the tides turned. But, you know, it was honestly the campaign, I have to say, especially the last few days. You know, I don't know if you remember, but the polls did close up a little bit at the end, and we were hopeful the very last minute. So we never really, you know, let that get in our head too much, but we fought a good fight, and, you know, that was it. It didn't turn out the way we wanted, but.
No, you certainly did, and I hear you on the dynamic of, you know, Kim sort of taking the high road, and Kim sort of being – you know, sort of like the good soldier mentality and sort of moving forward and chugging ahead. And, you know, it was interesting, certainly, as you mentioned about the polls, and it certainly didn't work out. But moving forward now to you, Alyssa, certainly, you know, that experience working a very, you know, high-stakes campaign, a very visible one, you know, you're battle-tested now. So having gone and experienced that, I mean, you're battle-tested. So, you know, moving forward now to your election coming up for November, I know you are a Republican, and, you know, you're running as a Republican, correct? I also want to sort of dissect with you is sort of, you know, right now in 2018, you know, how do you, and we'll get to a national conversation later, but on a statewide level, how do you view the New Jersey GOP at this time? Do you feel it's moving in a direction that perhaps you'll be able to lean on to help you as you're going to be moving forward into November to ultimately get elected and continue in the seat you're in right now?
All right. So I guess first off, I just think that, you know, obviously, like you said, we'll get to the national conversation later, but I think that is a huge part of it. And in my mind, you know, I've had a lot of people who come to me and just say, you know, oh my gosh, you're so young, you know, most young people aren't Republicans. And, you know, that statement kind of frustrates me because I think that the Republican Party is very alive and well. And obviously we have our issues, as does the Democratic Party. So, you know, I don't necessarily think that, you know, we're alone in that regard. But on a statewide basis, I think that, you know, a lot of what Governor Murphy's done speaks for itself. And, you know, I think he is doing exactly what he promised. And so I don't think that's a surprise to too many people. But, you know, in my own election in Westwood, I've taken a pretty firm stance that I kind of want to try and stay away from, the up-ticket issues and, you know, talking. Obviously, there are certain state issues like the marijuana and, you know, taxes.
Sure.
That, you know, naturally just come, you know, trickle down, and they do affect the municipality. And but, you know, for the purposes of campaigning, I've really tried so far, and I plan to do this going forward, to stay away from, you know, kind of running on those things and just trying to keep it, you know, our slogan for our campaign is always Westwood. And I basically, you know, we've stuck to that because I don't want to get into the weeds about, you know, things that don't really pertain. I think there's so much on a local level that we can do, you know, better, and we can really make things happen. And so that's kind of, you know, the stance I've taken. But obviously, yeah, there's a lot of issues with the Republican Party statewide. And, you know, people wanted a change, and I think they got it. And it's very clear that, you know, Murphy has no intention of, you know, backtracking on some of the promises he's made. He's going, you know, full throttle, doing everything he said. And I think while some of it has taken a little longer than he originally expected, I don't think that changes the direction that he's taking New Jersey in. So it's up to people like me. And I think there really are a lot of great young Republicans. I've met, you know, plenty of them. You've obviously spoken to a lot of them. And, you know, I think that we are strong, and, you know, we're not going to back down. And, you know, we always say that we are the future, and the future is now. It's, you know, we're doing it. We're not waiting to, you know, take action. We're doing it now. And that's kind of the mindset I have.
You know what? That's a great outlook to have, and that's a very healthy and positive one, Alyssa. So I completely applaud you on that. Folks, if you're just joining us right now at 8:30 on the East Coast, it's my pleasure here exclusively. Westwood Councilwoman Alyssa K. Dawson joining us here on Politically Direct. Alyssa, for our listeners tonight, especially those that are tuning in from Westwood, what are the issues that really encompass the township of Westwood, and what are you running on in the sense of the issues that matter most to homeowners and taxpayers and residents in your municipality?
So I've grown up here. I'm obviously 24. I've lived in Westwood my whole life, and we've been very blessed to have a council that, you know, has been a Republican majority for a very, very long time. I think as long as we can go back and find out. And, you know, we really, I wouldn't say have many issues. I think we really have done, the council has done a lot of things really well fiscally. You know, we have, you know, we're always ranked as one of the safest towns in New Jersey. So there's really a lot of great things happening right now. And I've kind of pledged to just, you know, hopefully, you know, obviously the councilmen now, they're, you know, their time's going to come and they're going to step down. And it's, I want, rather than wait, you know, 5, 10, 15 years to step up, I figured let me do it now. Let me see what they're doing well and just try and carry that into the future. With that said, you know, there are some big issues now that a lot of towns around Westwood have, you know, taken into account, the marijuana issue. Obviously, we know legalization is well on its way. There's been a lot of towns right around us that have already instituted the ban, you know, on recreational and medicinal, some just recreational. But that's one of the issues that we're going to look to kind of delve into a little further as we get, you know, probably into September. You know, but that's something, you know, Westwood is a very small town. It's, you know, we have a great central business district, and, you know, we don't really want, you know, we don't want vape shops. We don't want, you know, places like that coming in to our downtown. And I think that's something that hits home for a lot of people in Westwood. And that's obviously a state issue. So, you know, while we kind of want to wait to see where the state goes with that, there are some things that we want to do proactively to kind of handle that before it hits home. So that's one of the things that we're going to, you know, issue wise that we're going to kind of delve into. The other real interesting issue that we're looking into now is the Airbnbs. I don't know. I'm sure you've read a lot about what's kind of been going on with that. That was another tax that Phil Murphy put into effect, actually.
I know.
But there was
I know.
Yeah. but with the Airbnbs, you know, that's been a topic of conversation for Westwood. Do we want Airbnbs in our town? And, you know, a lot of the research I've done and conversations I've had with, you know, even just police and you know, law enforcement officers. Those Airbnbs, very interestingly, are often used for some really, you know, bad things. I mean, they're ways for, you know, drug rings to come into small towns kind of under, you know, undercover without people knowing. They, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of issues with, you know, pedophiles and people like that getting within, you know, close range of schools. And so that's another issue that we're really going to look to kind of do a little more research and see if there's, you know, it's something that we need to tackle before, you know, it happens around here. So, you know, those are, I'd say, two of the hot topics that we're going to try and, you know, get a little deeper into as we get into the campaign, the heart of the campaign. But other than that, I think, you know, Westwood, obviously, you know, taxes are going up on a state level. We all have seen that clearly. And Westwood's done a great job. The council, you know, in the past 3 years has reduced the debt in Westwood by over $3 million. Taxes have been kept stable. I mean, they haven't been lowered, but they've been kept stable considering, you know, and when you look at what Trenton's done to, you know, have a hand in that, that's quite a great accomplishment on the part of the council here. So, you know, I kind of just, my mindset is I want to stay on the path we're on. I do have, you know, luckily I have, you know, state experience, and I think there's a lot of connections I've made with, you know, Assemblywoman Holly Schapese is a great, you know, friend of ours here in Westwood, and that's someone that, you know, I look to use down the road to try and, you know, maybe, you know, there's some legislation maybe that can help us in Westwood, and, you know, sometimes it just takes a conversation to make that happen. So those are all things that I'm going to really try and deal with as we go forward.
You know, yeah. What? Well said, Alyssa. And certainly I think that when we talk about, again, you know, I'm a history buff, and I'm always of belief that, you know, all politics is local. And I've always believed that firmly. And I know that, you know, your town in Westwood is no different than any other town in New Jersey. Certainly, you know, we deal with the dynamics of a larger population, maybe more diversity, maybe less. But the bottom line is that, like any other municipality, you know, each town has its issues. Each town has issues that matter most to residents. And I can mm-hmm. completely relate to what you're talking about when it comes to looking at, you know, the ongoing conversation and debate. For example, you know, you brought up marijuana legalization, and I'm not sure if you had a chance to listen to my opening monologue, but I've been consistent on this program since I started in January, where, you know, before getting into academia, I worked criminal justice system for 10 years. So I have firsthand experience dealing with people. And, you know, one of the things that disappoints me, I think, about the legislature right now is that, you know, we're seeing, and again, I applaud State Senator Scutari for introducing legislation about really advancing decriminalization, really trying to get it right. But it just seems to be like an ongoing unfortunate circumstance in New Jersey where, you know, we keep arresting, you know, disproportionately and incarcerating black and brown people in New Jersey for marijuana arrests. And quite frankly, it's a waste because we could be using that money in a much more productive and proactive manner in New Jersey. And it's disappointing.
Absolutely.
It's still lagging. And again, you know, I'm always of the, you know, I said it at the beginning of the show. It's like, I don't have a horse in this race because I don't smoke marijuana. I never have. Like, I'm a wine drinker. Like, you want to make me happy? Give me a bottle of wine and a Cuban cigar.
I agree with that.
You know, give me a bottle of red, either a Cabernet or a Malbec, and I'm happy.
Rosé.
Yeah, rosé's okay. You know, maybe if I'm having pasta, but just rosé on its own, I don't know. It depends. But definitely a good choice. But the idea is that, you know, it's taking this long in New Jersey. And I get it. You know, everything operates sometimes at a very lethargic pace in Trenton. But I'm really hoping they get this right, because the idea that, you know, listen, I teach college students. I've seen firsthand the impact of what can happen to my students, for example. If they get arrested with a low amount of marijuana, maybe they lose their student aid, they're going to get arrested.
Yeah.
They're not going to be able to, you know, gain employment. And it becomes a vicious cycle, Alyssa, in our criminal justice system, especially in New Jersey. And again, I don't know where I sit on outright legalization, because I'm with you. You know, I know a lot of municipalities don't want a dispensary. You know, where I live in Union City, I mean, it's much more densely populated than Westwood, but there's a big commercial area just like in Westwood. And quite frankly, you know, I don't mind seeing my, you know, the typical CVS or this chain or that chain store, but the idea of a dispensary or just, it just seems to me that it, I think a lot of residents, not because I'm antiquated. I mean, I think I'm pretty progressive on this topic. I'm not thrilled with the idea of having that in my community. What's been your feedback from residents in Westwood about that?
Well, you know, we've had the conversation here and there with people. I mean, listen, I know I grew up in this town, obviously, and, you know, I remember our downtown being, you know, these small little stores, and, you know, I look now and I'm like, I walk down the, you know, the main avenue and I'm like, I just cannot picture it. It just doesn't fit in my mind. And, you know, more so than the, you know, having it in the downtown, I think that there's so much more, you know, research to be done just on the overall, you know, effect of it. I know everyone argues like about it, whether it's a gateway drug or not. And at the end of the day, it is a drug. And obviously there are, you know, there's a lot of issues with it. And I think that people tend to forget, you know, what can happen and how, you know, those things can be abused just like anything else. And, you know, I just don't know that we want to, you know, have a trial run of it, you know, in Westwood. I mean, it just doesn't seem right to me. And, you know, so I think, I mean, I know that there's been a lot of people in Westwood who have, we do have kind of a, I don't want to say like an industrial area, but we do have a kind of an area over near our hospital where it's kind of like, it is a little bit more industrial. I mean, it's kind of offset from the central business district. And, you know, I've had people who say like, oh, well, you know, we could put one over there. And to me, it just, you know, I don't think we just put one there for the sake of putting one there. I think there's a lot more, you know, to be said about, you know, number one, whether we do it, and number two, if we do, where it needs to go. So I think that, you know, only time will tell. And you know, we are obviously going to start getting a lot more feedback. We're going to, you know, be reaching out to a lot more people in Westwood alone just to see how people feel about it. And, you know, we'll kind of go from there. But I am very interested to see what happens, because obviously I know Phil Murphy, if he had had it his way, it would have already been legalized, but it's obviously taken a slower course and, you know, because of his own party, which I find interesting.
Actually, I'm glad you brought that up, because the dynamics within the Democratic Party in New Jersey are very different. I mean, certainly just because you have a D next to your name, you know, a Steve Sweeney Democrat is very different than a Phil Murphy Democrat. I think we've come to learn that.
Absolutely.
We saw that last month during the budget showdown. And even, you know, mm-hmm. what, even within the Republican Party, even as a Republican, just because you have an R next to your name, not every Republican's cut out of the same cloth. And this helps me show.
I really want to speak to this for a second, because this is something that I've gotten a lot of pushback for. And, you know, if you've read anything about me, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, I've had quite a few articles written, and people, you know, they all have a mention of the fact that I'm gay. And this is obviously a very interesting thing. And a lot of people have a hard time wrapping their head around it. How can you be, you know, gay? You know, how can you be a gay Republican? And, you know, that really irritates me. And, you know, that's another reason why I absolutely agree that, you know, the Democrat Party has issues just as the Republican Party does.
Sure.
And we are not all cut from the same cloth. And I think that's something that young people are doing a really good job at, you know, making people notice, is that, you know, we, just because you have an R does not mean that you're, you know, a homophobe. And just because you're an R does not mean that, you know, you are, you know, against marijuana. You know, everyone's different.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate that it has become this, you know, this two-party system where, you know, you feel like you are, you know, this labeled a certain way just because you identify as a Republican. I mean, you know, obviously I agree with, you know, there were things that I agreed with Chris Christian and things that he did that I didn't like, but that didn't mean that I was going to change parties. And, you know, and that's one of the things that Lieutenant Governor Godano got a lot of kickback from people on. You know, she was very publicly, she had no problem telling people that she was pro-choice. She was, you know, pro-LGBT. And, you know, a lot of the people who were much more right than that, we had an issue with that. And, you know, that's, everyone's different. And that's really one of the, I would say, stereotypes that I'm trying very hard to defeat, that it's not all about, you know, the R or the D. It's really it comes down to a lot more than that. And I think that young people are going to do a much better job at making that known and showing that, you know, it doesn't define you. The R or the D does not define you.
No, listen, you're absolutely right. And it sort of helps me segue into our next topic here, because as a political scientist, you know, I'm a political junkie. I love dissecting politics. I'm a very dedicated student of the discipline. And, you know, I've brought this up to other guests and certainly to you. I'll sort of pose the same question. And, you know, it's sort of part of the reason why I'm an independent. I mean, technically, you know, my parents laugh because they're like, well, you have to be something. And I'm like, no, I don't. I mean, if you're going to put a gun to my head and tell me how I should identify as, well, then quite frankly, Alyssa, you know what, then I'm a registered member of the Constitution Party. Like, that's the way I answer people. And it blows their mind, because they're like, what? They're like, what? What does that mean? I'm like, what do you mean? What does it mean? Like, look it up. I don't think I have to tell you what, you know, that means in terms of standing behind our most sacred document. But the idea that, you know, again, both parties, I think, have been getting it wrong for the following reasons. And I sort of wanted to pick your brain tonight, and because I respect your political IQ, and I wanted to hear what you think of my dissection. And this is the way I sort of look at both parties on a national and on a state level here in New Jersey. I'll tell you right now what I think, Alyssa, is wrong with the Republican Party. I would argue that the Republican Party, I think, doesn't work hard enough to relate to working class people and poor people. Number one, reforming drug laws, reforming our criminal justice system. If we saw a more rapid pace towards decriminalization, you would be surprised how working class people would probably start, you know, flocking to the Republican Party if they focus on some of these issues. And I think that's where the Republican Party on a national level and on a state level get it wrong. I think that they don't work hard enough, I feel, to relate to working class people, to poor people. And I think that they're doing themselves a huge disservice, because, again, they're the party of, you know, limited government, and the party of, you know, fiscal management. And that's great, but we're not seeing that. And I think if the party got back to those sort of that bread and butter, the blueprint, I think they would get a lot more women, and they'd get a lot more minorities on their side. The problem with the Democratic Party, and I've said this vividly, and I don't really care who I offend tonight, the problem with the Democratic Party, not just in New Jersey but nationally, has been this sort of having a fixation on identity politics and turning people off with your fake outrage, with sort of this subscribing to, you know, I'm going to milk my victimhood to its maximum capacity. I'm going to find a way to make sure that, you know, that there's an obsession when introducing race and gender. And that fixation on identity politics turns tremendously.
I absolutely agree. Honestly, with both of your points, and I think that at this point, the parties have just gone so much head-to-head that they've both gotten off track, and there's obviously a whole middle ground. And, you know, I've actually, to be honest, there was a thought in my mind when I first started this whole, you know, council thing, and I said to myself, like, imagine if I did run as an independent. But, you know, unfortunately, for especially in a local race, I think that kind of carries an unknown to a lot of people. Like, you know, it would be like, oh my gosh, you know, what does that mean kind of thing? And, you know, I do identify as a Republican for a lot of reasons. But I absolutely agree that, you know, both parties have a lot of work to do. And I think that they both kind of just need to get back to, you know, the people. And I think that's really one thing that I really want to focus on. And, you know, especially for me, the LGBT stuff is, you know, a big issue. And I think that, you know, people look at the Republican Party and, you know, because there's been, you know, a few people who have, you know, been homophobic, or it's like, oh my gosh, you know, you need to get away from that. And in my mind, it's, I don't want to get away from that. I don't want to run away from my party, the party that I align myself with, just because, you know, there's a few people who have made homophobic comments. I'd rather stay in it and, you know, obviously try and dispel those myths to people and, you know, forge my own path. And, you know, that's why, you know, I've had people who've come to me and say, I don't know how you could, you know, even be a Republican with Trump as president. He's so awful. And it's like, okay, yeah, it doesn't mean I agree with Trump on everything, but I'm not just going to run away and all of a sudden become a Democrat because I don't agree with the president. I mean, to me, it's just, you know, no person, as I said before, no, we're not all cut from the same cloth. No person agrees with, you know, any leader on everything. And at the end of the day, I think you have to stay true to yourself. And I think, you know, that's what more people need to do. And I have a lot of faith in people my age. I think we're really doing a good job at that. And, you know, I think as long as we stay on that path, then hopefully we will get to a point where the Republican Party will be more focused on, you know, working class people. And hopefully the Democrats get away from the identity politics, because I think it would do all of us a lot of good if we could do that on both sides.
Oh, certainly. Absolutely. And when you mentioned your age demographics, of course, when you saw the Insider NJ power list come out on Tuesday, I saw you at number 20. I mean, congratulations on that placement. How did you feel when you saw that ranking? And overall, when you look at that list of millennials that are, again, on the rise, or millennials to watch in New Jersey, you know, besides yourself, obviously, you're one to watch, of course. Anybody else on that list that got your attention, Alyssa, as to like, wow, you know what, he or she really, you got to watch out for this person. This person's, you know what, you got to watch out for him or her. He or she's going to really, really start making some noise. Anybody stand out for you on that list?
I mean, there were a lot of names that I recognized, probably too many for me to mention. I do want to give a shout out to my good friend, Sarah Nybart, who is another, she was a fellow All In with Kim colleague, and she's someone that I have a lot of respect for. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with the group that she started. She started a nonprofit organization called Fair Property Taxes for All New Jersey. I'm not sure. Have you heard of them at all?
Yes, I have. I'm familiar, yes.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's amazing. And, you know, for someone, you know, that's my age, her age, you know, we are basically a year apart, to be doing something like that, I think is super powerful. So I do have a lot of respect for Sarah. But overall, you know, I looked through that list and it really was just very inspirational. And, you know, I look at myself a year ago, I did not think I'd be, you know, sitting here on the phone with you, number 20 on that list, a councilwoman in Westwood. I mean, you know, I wouldn't say I didn't have those aspirations, but, you know, I didn't know when it was going to happen. I didn't know how I was going to get involved. It kind of just, you know, I don't want to say fell into my lap, but it kind of did. And obviously it's something I have to continue to pursue on my own, and I'm choosing to do that. But I think that's that list for, you know, there's a lot of people also who were not on that list that obviously are making waves. And, you know, I looked at that list and I said, you know, I remember looking at it last year and saying like, wow, this is so cool. And now a year later, I'm on it. So I think that's, you know, encouraging for all young people. You know, I know a lot of 16, 17 year olds who are, you know, not on that list and who are extremely passionate about, you know, politics and just making a difference. And I think the fact that there are so many of us is very encouraging going forward. So, you know, and we're doing it. We're actually acting on it. We're not just walking around saying, like, we want to make a change. We want to, you know, make a difference. We are making a difference. And I think that's very powerful.
No, listen, you're absolutely right. And, again, looking at that list when it was published on Tuesday, and, again, a great job by my colleagues and boss at Insider NJ for a very thorough and very detailed list. So, you know, heads up.
Yeah.
Excellent job by Peter Nellia. By Peter Nellia.
A lot of people and, you know, a lot of parties. And, you know, it wasn't, you know, I think that's what's great. You know, I don't care if you're a Democrat or Republican. If you're young and you're passionate, then you know, kudos to you.
Oh, listen, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. And, again, kudos to my GM, Peter Nellia, and Max Pizarro, who does a wonderful job as the editor at Insider, for really compiling a very thorough and not just sort of like a very simplistic list. I mean, like, you could tell that they put a lot of work into really writing each caption with detail and not writing some generic type of narrative about someone. And I think that's really the testament of how good that list was. You know, listen, one of the things that stood out for me earlier in the show, and folks, if you're just joining us right now, it's 8:55 on the East Coast, and it's my pleasure to have here on the program tonight Westwood Councilwoman Alyssa K. Dawson here on the show.
I love that you say my middle name. I love it.
Oh, did I mispronounce it or no? Did I say
no,
it correctly?
No, no, no. I like that you said it. I think it's fun. my Facebook name. I have my middle name on my Facebook, so, you know, people take it from there. Yeah. But
definitely, yeah, definitely. You know, one of the things, Alyssa, that stood out for me in your narrative was the concerns you have about Governor Murphy, and I share them too. And, you know, one of the things that really stand out for me, aside from the fact that, you know, I know that State Senator Smith in Middlesex County last week introduced a bill to start taxing the water. I mean, pretty soon we'll tax the air, as my good friend Katie Saracola would say, you know, that pretty much, like, what's left in the air? I mean, I don't know what's left of tax in New Jersey.
It'll be next. It'll be next.
Most likely. You know, I feel like we'll be in Spaceballs, where, like, the air in Planet Geridia, like, has to, I swear to God, I'm convinced at some point.
No, it's crazy. Well, it's really crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, there'll be, like, air in cans where, like, President Scrooge was, like, breathing in the air. It's crazy. What concerns you? And listen, we're only 7 months in, and clearly Governor Murphy avoided a tremendous black eye to his administration by having a shutdown within, you know, in this first term. What concerns you the most about the governor's platform? I mean, obviously, you know, you worked hands-on in Kim's, you know, campaign last year. You saw firsthand what then-candidate Murphy was advocating for. And, you know, you made a great point before. You know, everything he ran on, like, he's doing. It's, you know, sometimes, you know, we get on politicians from either party that, oh, you run on a platform, and then when you get into office, you don't do what you promise. Well, you know, he's doing what he promised. And for a lot of New Jerseyans, it's a concern. I'm a homeowner. I'm a taxpayer. I'm concerned. Right now, what stands out for you as a red flag about the Murphy administration?
Well, you know what I think really blows my mind is that, okay, he has now you know, raised taxes, you know, in a ton of ways. I mean, I just was, before I got on the phone with you, I was just scrolling through NJ.com, and, you know, I came across the article from the other day that was, you know, Murphy's six months in, what has he done? And it was just a long list of all the taxes, the different taxes that he's raised and, you know, put in place. And I look at that and I say, you know, it's one thing to raise taxes. It's really scary when you raise taxes and you don't even know what you're getting out of that. And I think in this regard, we're not getting anything better out of any of this. And that's really the issue I have. You know, Westwood is obviously, we have high taxes here. You know, like I mentioned, they've been stable, thankfully, but they are, you know, on the higher side. And one of the things that residents say that I've spoken to are, you know, we don't mind paying high taxes because, you know, we at least, you know, we're getting, you know, great services for our money. And I think that, you know, obviously says a lot for, you know, the work that, you know, my colleagues have done on the council. But you look at the state and it's like, you know, he wants to, you know, raise taxes. Okay, great. You want to raise taxes? Then tell me what I'm going to get for it. Because now we're paying more. And, you know, honestly, things are just, in my mind, getting worse. I don't think anything's getting better. And, you know, it's common sense to me. And that's one of the issues I had. And it took me so long to, you know, come to terms with why New Jersey really elected this guy governor. And I look at it and I'm like, you know, what did they think they were going to get out of this? I mean, you know, and I truly can't answer that question because I don't really think we're getting much.
Well, listen, you're not wrong. I know a lot of New Jerseyans that that share that sentiment. And one of the things that I find disappointing, Alyssa, and again, as you read NJ.com, I mean, I hope you read Insider more from now on, I hope.
Right. Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, one of the things that really disappoints me, I think, is, you know, I read the Newswire every day. I read NJ 101.5 FM. I read NJ.com. I read Insider. I read North Jersey. And it just seems to me, it sort of, you know, I want to get your thoughts on this because, you know, social media and you know, the keyboard courage that people develop because of social media has really changed our political climate, not just locally, but statewide and nationally. I always find it funny that I read some of these websites, whether it's generically online or on their Facebook page, and you see these comment threads and you see people commenting day after day, voicing their displeasure, but I don't see a mobilization of people. Like, I'm not saying you have to go camp out in front of the governor's mansion and protest and have a sit down. But
yeah,
again, I see a lot. People
like
to
complain.
Yeah, I see a lot of outrage online. But where's the mobilization by taxpayers? Where's the outrage of people taking to the streets and marching or having a peaceful assembly and saying, "Hey," and to the point you made before about you know, the governor. I mean, listen, I also want to sort of, you know, I don't want to throw him completely under the bus because I kind of hold the legislature as accountable.
Yeah,
you know,
year
after year, we keep seeing the state budget increasing, and it seems that the legislature can't sort of, you know, get out of its own way when it comes to looking at what to tax and you know, try to curtail spending, which I think is the first thing that I'm hoping for. And listen, the way it looks right now in the legislature, I mean, Democrats hold a decisive command in both chambers, mm-hmm. both in the Assembly and both the State Senate. So that's not going to change anytime soon. I mean, you know, if Republicans are really serious about doing that, about making some gains, we'll see if it happens. But I think the legislature has been just as culpable in the sense of, you know, I looked at the budget showdown, Alyssa, and it was sort of like, well, wait a minute. It's a bunch of Democrats in a room arguing who can raise taxes more. You know, that's how I looked at
absolutely.
The showdown. And to me as a homeowner, I was demoralized. And, you know, as you're running locally in Westwood this November, again, to your point, residents have expressed that, you know, they pay a certain amount of taxes. They're getting a certain amount of services. There's the school system. From what I've read, Alyssa, you can tell me if I'm wrong, the school system in Westwood is very top notch. You know,
absolutely.
What would you say needs to improve in Westwood at a municipal level that's going to at least maybe ease some of the fears for residents when it comes to taxation?
I mean, honestly, I think we can continue doing what we've been doing or what my colleagues have been doing, which is, you know, try and reduce debt. And, you know, I know there has been some talk about, you know, shared services. That's a topic that's come up. So I think, you know, there are things that we can do, but I really look at the, you know, I look at the budget and, you know, if I, you know, listen, I still live at home. And that's because I honestly could not afford to live on my own right now with the way, you know, the affordability crisis that I think we have in the state. So, I'm at least happy that I'm able to be at home for now, but, you know, that's a whole nother issue. But I looked at, you know, my parents, or actually my grandparents' property tax bill. And, you know, I looked into it a little deeper and I'm like, you look at it and the breakdown is it's scary to see how little of the bill actually goes to the town and how much of it goes to the school. And I think that the school funding is such a big issue. And obviously I'm sure you've seen, you know, what Murphy has done to deal with that. And I know that our school district here in Westwood is actually getting, you know, a couple million dollars more. But in my mind, it's like, it's just a Band-Aid on the problem. It's like, let's take, you know, take money from some schools that had, you know, we think they have too much and let's give it to others that don't have enough. And, you know, I don't think it's fixing the problem. So, I mean, granted, I think Westwood at this point, what we can do is kind of just mitigate the damage that's being done by Trenton. And hope that, you know, somehow, some way, Trenton can kind of get their act together and, you know, give all of New Jersey property taxpayers and just taxpayers in general some relief. But, you know, like I said, I am proud of the job they've done between the reducing debt and, you know, keeping taxes stable and, you know, not having them go through the roof, I think is, you know, kind of the best we can do right now. And we're doing it and residents are overly, you know, mostly satisfied with that. And, you know, that's one of the things that I try and get people to understand. Not that I want to throw, you know, Phil Murphy and Trenton under the bus. And obviously it's not, you know, it was Governor Christie too. I mean, taxes were too high during that administration as well. But that's one thing that I'm trying to get people to realize now that I kind of have skin in the game, on a municipal level, is that, you know, your property taxes are not, the town can only do so much, I guess, is the point I'm trying to make. So, you know, Trenton does have a heavy hand in, you know, whether or not they can be lowered. And I think that's kind of, you know, where we're at here.
Listen, it's demoralizing for sure for taxpayers and homeowners, definitely, when we hear this about sort of the fiscal cliff we're heading towards. And I want to sort of rewind a little bit because I want to get your thoughts, Alyssa. Again, as you're running a campaign to get elected in November, we know that that social media has completely changed the way we look at politics and the way we look at campaigns. You know, right now, and I know we touched upon it before about how polarizing sort of the political climate is, and we'll get to the national one in a moment, but what concerns you right now, even at a local level when you're running for council in November, what concerns you about the state of social media and really its impact on politics?
Well, I mean, honestly, we've had a very good, I'll be honest, I'm obviously the youngest in my town, the youngest council person in my town, and they'd never really used Facebook too much in past elections. I mean, they had a Facebook page that was, had a pretty good following, but I kind of, when I came on board, I said, this is a huge asset for us, and especially me being young and trying to kind of pull in some of the younger people in my town who never really felt like they cared or had a voice. I'm pretty active on it. We've done a lot with, I've invited a lot of, younger people that I've grown up with in town to, kind of read the Facebook and try and, get on our page and kind of see what we're doing. So I do think that it, is obviously a very helpful tool. With that being said, we know the dangers of it, and we know that, stupid things can be said and stupid things can be spread. And I think, you just kind of have to be cautious. But in my mind, and I think a lot of other people my age would agree that as far as campaigning goes and the use of social media, it's extremely helpful, especially when you're trying to get other young people involved and just kind of, get them to kind of pay attention. So
absolutely.
I love it.
No, absolutely. And speaking of paying attention, I wanted to sort of transition to a sort of a national outlook for you. And I discussed this with some previous guests, and I've talked about this with colleagues. And, Alyssa, if you're familiar with academia, one of the most aggravating aspects of this profession is dealing with colleagues that are very far left. And trying to have a civilized discussion at times can be extremely frustrating. And I don't know if you've ever come across that, or in your discussions online or in general, it can be frustrating. And I sort of want to read you a post I had recently, and I want to sort of get your thoughts on this and dissect it, because it sort of lends itself to sort of the conversation about the narrative, because, the midterms coming up in November here in New Jersey, it's a very interesting time. We have some congressional seats in North Jersey that are going to be hotly contested. We have a U.S. Senate race that we'll get to in a moment. I sort of want to hear your thoughts on it. But there was a Democratic pollster to thehill.com, and the pollster had talked about looking at data and saying that the recent controversy, for example, of the Trump family separation controversy was unlikely to harm the GOP in the fall. And that was based on data that she gathered. And I wrote this as a status, and tell me what you think afterwards, because I think it lends itself to sort of the larger conversation about where we stand politically. I wrote, "I'm not surprised. Folks, here's a painful truth that many on my newsfeed refuse to see. Yes, the president in many instances lacks decorum. Yes, the president in many instances makes statements that are detrimental to the office. Yes, the president does not always conduct himself in a manner that is suitable or reflects being a role model, especially for our youth. However, many of us, like myself, vote with our pockets in what I call, quote, the eye test. In other words, it's what I see. So many of us may not care about what this pollster is referencing. Hence, if the economy continues upon its current course, with job creation being at record highs, ISIS continuing to be weakened overseas with the recent killing of 12 commanders in a top-secret operation, some serious advances finally in the care of our veterans due to recent legislation signed into law, unemployment continues at very low rates for women, blacks, and Hispanics, what exactly is the message going to be for the other side? Now, I want serious answers, folks. I don't want to hear, quote, resist this or resist that. That clearly doesn't win elections. So what do you have for me? I wrote that, and certainly, as you know, on Facebook, that can erupt into, dozens upon dozens of comments. Alyssa,
yeah.
When you look at that observation by me, am I wrong anywhere?
I completely agree. I actually had this conversation with one of my friends the other day, who is very much, I would say, pretty far left. And, they were basically saying to me, I just don't know how you can, even support or respect this guy. I mean, he's, these tweets are terrible. And I just looked at him and said, until the other side comes up with a better message, he will not, you know, I can't tell you that I don't think he's going to get reelected again. I mean, he, at the end of the day, like, I completely agree. He may tweet stupid things. He may say stupid things. It's, you know, we all can agree on that. But at the end of the day, he's done things that, you know, people have said he wouldn't be able to do. You have seen improvements in so many aspects. You know, obviously not everyone agrees on that, but, you know, like you just said, I mean, the unemployment rate, you know, the job creation, I mean, you can't argue with those numbers. And I just don't, you know, I just think that it is, it's like you mentioned before, with the fixation on identity politics, people would so much rather just, you know, fixate themselves with, you know, oh my God, the tweeting and this. It's like, if these people spent half of that time, you know, trying to come up with a solution going forward, you know, I think we'd be in a much better place, but people would rather just complain. And it's, you know, I think at the end of the day, I don't really care what he tweets. I mean, you know, obviously, is it frustrating at times to see, like, okay, the president is tweeting, you know, ridiculous in all caps at the Iranian president. Yeah, it looks ridiculous.
But
at the end of the day, it's like, I choose not to, you know, focus on that. It's like, I'd rather focus on what he's doing for our country and what he can do for our country rather than, you know, really spending all my day on Twitter, you know, complaining about the fact that he's on Twitter. I mean, that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, it sounds silly. You're right. And I have to laugh sometimes at sort of the political discourse on a national and state level, because I just sort of look at this with, I don't know, like sometimes I just, I get so nauseated looking at the way that sort of the national dialogue continues and sort of the statewide one. And I sort of want to get your thoughts, because I know before when you talked about, you know, identifying as a Republican, and I sort of wanted to pick your brain on this, Alyssa, because, for example, for me, you know, being in academia, and you know this firsthand, again, you know, liberalism has really infested academia to the point where it's almost become scary. And, you know, I'm a very middle of the road type of voter. You know, I'm a registered independent. When people ask me, well, Fernando, what are you? I'm like, all right, well, if you're really going to harass me, then I'm a dues paying member of the Constitution Party. Okay. Because that's just what I believe in, and that's fine. And people just laugh, and that's fine. But it's interesting, because I want to get your sense on how you feel, because for many of my colleagues in academia, Alyssa, like when I go to campus and I go to the faculty room and I just want to have my coffee and have my muffin, like I can't even sit down. I can't even add cream to my goddamn coffee, excuse my language. And without someone saying, oh my God, Fernando, did you see what Trump said? I give him this look like, can I have my muffin? Like, can you wait until you speak? Until you start moaning and groaning? Like, and you know, there's so, again, we see it in academia, we see it a lot in a good portion of our press, and not just, you know, nationally, but, you know, statewide, where my colleagues look at me, and I'm very middle of the road. I think you've seen my social media content. I don't think I'm some, yeah, I don't, absolutely. I think I'm very centrist. And, but to them, for example, I'm some right-wing fanatic. And on the flip side, for example, you know, I have conversations, let's say, with my dad, who's very conservative, and at times I've been perceived as a socialist. Alyssa, I'm a lot of things, and I'm sure you can verify by looking at my social media. The last thing you can call me is a socialist. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's a frustrating dynamic for me, because on the ideological spectrum, you know, you can't please everybody. Nobody's happy with how you respond. So for you, for example, like, again, you mentioned a couple of things that, you know, you're very, you know, very active in the, because you are in the LGBT community, you have some progressive positions, but you're also, you know, about responsible spending and limited government. When you think about where you sit in the ideological spectrum, like, what's an answer you normally tend to give people?
I tend to say I'm a middle of the road Republican. That's kind of just the, I guess, the phrase I've used, because I've too been accused of, you know, being a right wing crazy, which really cracks me up, you know, being that I am gay. And it's not like I'm walking around using that card, you know, on a daily basis saying like, oh, I'm gay, you know. Yeah, because I actually, there was somebody who came to me and said that they heard from another person that there was people talking about the fact that I was gay, and they said that because I'm a Republican, I'm the wrong type of gay. And that really just, I was like, you know what, this is, you know, it's like, it's crazy to me. Like this, you know, the two-sided, you know, the hypocrisy really, really blows my mind. And I think that it's a shame because we, you know, like we've both said before, obviously both parties have work to do, and it would be awesome if we could just meet in the middle at some point. But I do think that, you know, at this point, it's up to young people like me to make that happen, because it's definitely, with the way the world's going now, it's, you know, unless more young people get involved, it will never happen. And your point about that, it, you know, the academia aspect, I mean, I just think back to when I was in college. I went to a very small liberal arts school in New York, and, you know, we had a lot of, sorry, my dog.
That's okay.
We had a lot of professors who, and, you know, I was obviously pretty politically inclined in college, and I had a ton of professors who, you know, very much tried to just ingrain in my mind this, you know, liberal mindset. And I remember just thinking to myself, like, this is such a disservice to students. I mean, you know, for a student that walks into a classroom, you know, freshman year of college and, you know, really wants to learn and wants to get more involved and, you know, wants to kind of try and figure things out for themselves, it's such a disservice that you have, you know, the media and professors who have tried to paint, you know, people's mindsets, especially young people. And it really, it's awful. And I hope that, you know, as time goes on and as, you know, younger people get involved, that kind of ceases to exist. But for now, it's very disheartening to see.
No, you're right. And the level of indoctrination that we're seeing, not just in academia right now, Alyssa, I mean, we're seeing it as early as high school, all the way into elementary school. I mean, there are some districts in New Jersey that I'm sure you read about as well that are alarming with some of the stunts that teachers pull. And it's really, you know, it's disappointing because, again, you know, I take pride. I went into this profession because I love teaching. I love the discourse. I love, you know, having dialogues with my students. And because I teach sociology, it's easier for me to sort of have that rapport with students and be able to have, you know, good conversations and try to be intellectually honest. And we're not seeing that. And you're absolutely right. It's really a concern because it's, you know, the indoctrination that we see, especially at the collegiate level, it's sort of, and, you know, it's ironic that this week with the millennial list that Insider provides, I mean, the word millennial sometimes carries a very negative connotation, doesn't it? And when you hear I mean, again, I'm not saying that I don't want to paint with a broad brush, but collectively, though, when we think about millennials in the political process, what needs to change to really sort of help millennials kick that really black cloud, I think, that hovers over them?
I mean, I think that there's just, you know, the negative stigma obviously exists. I mean, to be honest, I can't tell you how many of my own friends that I've had, you know, outside of the, you know, the political circle who have just been like, I'm like, oh, you know, they see these articles about me and they're like, oh, congratulations. And I'm like, yeah, it's pretty cool. And they're like, but what do you really do? I mean, I think the general, you know, generally people just don't really understand outside of a very small circle. You know, people either aren't interested or they think, you know, their voice doesn't matter. But, you know, and obviously there's a negative stigma like, you know, oh, we, you know, we live in our parents' basements and, you know, we, you know, whatever, we eat avocado toast. I mean, that was like one of the big jokes of, you know, recent times that I've heard. And it's like, well, first of all, I do live in my parents' house, and that's because New Jersey is too expensive for me to live on my own. And I'd rather not, you know, waste money on rent when I can try and save money in my parents' house. So eventually I can move out. But that's not, you know, it's not a bad thing. But that is the stigma. And I think that hopefully, I mean, my hope is in Westwood especially is that I've really tried to connect with some of these younger people. I mean, I have a younger sister who obviously lives with me and, you know, she has a pretty big group of friends. And, you know, I've talked to a lot of them and I say, hey, you know, they think it's great that I'm running and they're like, oh, can I vote for you? And I'm like, you know, don't just vote for me to vote for me. You know, I want you to understand what you're voting for and why this matters. And, you know, I think it's through conversations like that and, you know, just encouraging others to actually care. That's how it changes. I, you know, it's not going to happen overnight, but it's, you know, it's going to take a lot of work. And, you know, I think that there's a good group of us, as you can see on that list, that are willing to do that.
Definitely. Absolutely. And again, you're leading the crusade there. as it pertains to, you know, young people that are engaged, that are involved in the process, and you're doing something about it. You're not just sort of sitting around. I mean, you're in the process. And you know, yeah. Aside from, and you mentioned before that as you're running, and certainly, you know, you read stuff online about your candidacy, and certainly people make references to the fact that you are gay, for example, Alyssa. And, you know, growing up, you know, whether regardless of whatever community you live in New Jersey, whether it's an urban or suburban area, you know, certainly in your upbringing from childhood into adolescence, and certainly, you know, those are perhaps conversations that can be awkward with parents, you know, when it comes to issues about orientation and when it comes to issues about, you know, being in the LGBT community. And I know that, you know, you're certainly an inspiration to people listening in tonight that are gay, that may be thinking about running for some sort of elected office, and they look at you as a role model. You know, how important do you take that response? How important do you take that responsibility when it comes to, you know, because you're gay and you're running for elected office, but also too, what can you tell our listeners tonight that perhaps maybe are struggling with maybe having the conversation with their parents and family, and they're not sure how to go about it? What can you tell them as sort of a pep talk tonight that can encourage them to start the conversation about their orientation and to come out to their family and to have their family embrace them and to be welcoming?
Yeah. So I guess this is actually, I'm glad you brought this up, because right after I got sworn in, so I was sworn in May, obviously June, you know, is Pride Month. And for the first time ever in Westwood, I mean, last year we had raised the Pride flag on our borough hall. But this year, for the first time, I myself, along with the rest of my colleagues and the mayor, we had a Pride ceremony at borough hall. And I spoke, and I spoke very openly about, you know, my own struggles when I was a 17-year-old and, you know, during my coming out journey. And I think the biggest, one of the lines that I've heard, and, you know, obviously I didn't come up with it, but that really helped me a lot, was that coming out is not a step, it's a journey. And I think that that's something that really rings true. And, you know, it kind of takes the pressure off of young people who feel like it needs to be like this one time, like, oh, I need to sit down and tell my parents, you know, tonight that I'm gay. I mean, it's not a step. It really is a process, and it can take a very long time. And, you know, for me, it took years for me to be comfortable, you know, especially to the point where I'm, you know, sitting right now on the phone with you talking about it. I mean, that, you know, I remember, you know, when I would, you know, I went through some really dark times because of it. And, you know, I think it's great that society as a whole is a lot more accepting and understanding, obviously, you know, with the exception of few. I think people are generally, you know, very, very open to the idea. And I think that alone is very helpful to those who may be struggling. But I think it really is important to remember that, you know, it's not an overnight, you know, it's not a one-step process. It's not a one-size-fits-all. It happens to everyone differently. You know, some people have to realize when they're 9 years old, some people when they're 17, or some people when they're older. I mean, it really is, you know, and I think that as long as people remember that, it can offer a lot of comfort. And, you know, I don't really know who's listening, but I would say that everyone can find me on Facebook, and I'm always willing to talk to anyone who wants to talk about that. It's obviously something I've personally been through, and I think that unless someone else has been through it, it's very hard to understand. So I offer myself up as help for anyone who is listening and would like, you know, to talk about it. But it's a big deal, and, you know, I know that for sure. So I respect anybody who has the strength and the courage to come out, but, you know, it definitely gets better. So that's you know, I'd like to focus on that.
Well, Alyssa, you're certainly an inspiration to young people everywhere, straight, gay, anywhere else in the LGBT community, because, you know, you're putting your name out there, you're going out there getting the work done, you're putting the hours in, and certainly, you know, again, that's a testament to how dedicated you are to your campaign. And before I let you go, just a couple more things here. I know you've been a sweetheart tonight to be on the phone with me for over an hour. I really wanted to get as much as I could in this program tonight to really, you know, feature you, and of course to really, you know, talk about politics, you know, at the local and state level, even national level as well. But before I let you go, you know, first and foremost, I want to thank you for coming on tonight. You've been an absolute sweetheart. You've been very transparent. And again, it's just, it's a testament to, you know, I work hard to get the best guests on this program, and I'm going to continue getting as many of these top millennials to watch on this program as I can. Certainly you're one of many I've already had, and I'm going to continue doing so. But before I let you go, a couple of things. I know you mentioned before you're a big Jet fan. I'm a big NFL fan. Training camp starts this week. What's your outlook on the Jets for 2018?
Oh God. It's such a sore subject. I've been a Jets fan for as long as I can remember. I think I was brainwashed as a child. And my grandpa had season tickets. So, you know, I've been on, it's been a long haul, but I actually am pretty psyched about this Sam Darnold guy that we have, who hopefully is our starting quarterback. I think that's how it's looking. I don't expect, you know, I try not to set my expectations too high because then I just, you know, get disappointed. But I, you know, I always start off the season hopeful. I'm quite the optimist in many aspects, and especially when it comes to the Jets, because, you know, if I was honest with myself, I'd be quite depressed constantly thinking about the fact that we probably will only win a few games.
Well, that's true. That's true. And before I let you go, you know, one of the things I like to do on the show after I've interviewed a guest, and actually, Alyssa, I just noticed I have a call in the call queue. You want to take a call here tonight, if possible? Would you be down for that?
Sure, I'll take one, and then I got to go to bed because I'm tired.
Yeah, definitely. All right, we got a 201 area code. Do me a favor for whoever's calling in right now. Please be respectful, your name, where you're calling from, and something brief tonight. So, 201 area code, what do you have for us tonight here? Welcome to Politically Direct.
How you doing? Thanks for taking my call. Stephen Ross. My question, Alyssa, you're from Bergen County. Recently, Bergen County's Monica Brinson announced she's going to be running for president in 2024. I wanted to know what do you think?
Monica, I met Monica during the Lieutenant Governor's campaign, and I have to say she is one hard worker. So, you know, I know Monica's, she said she was going to run for a lot of things, and I admire her, the motivation she has to constantly get out there and do it. But hey, I mean, if she's going to run, good for her. Monica's
Amen.
Great.
Steven,
She's a hard worker. She is.
Yeah, I've certainly read the same thing too, Stephen. I want to thank you for your phone call, Stephen, tonight. And do me a favor, please tell your friends about Politically Direct, and I hope you'll continue listening to the show each and every week, sir.
Absolutely, thank you.
All right, you're welcome.
Good
night. Have a good night. All right, Alyssa. Before I let you go, you know, real quickly, what I take pride in here on the show is after having my guest on. You know, I like to sort of give the floor to him or her and be like, hey, if you got a question for me, you want to grill me about something, the floor is yours. So do you have anything for me?
I mean, honestly, I don't. I think we had a great conversation, and I'm glad that you do this. I think it's great, and especially that you're willing to have so many different people on. It gives us a chance to kind of talk and gives you a chance to talk, and you know, I think you're awesome. So thank you so much for having me.
Oh my God, Alyssa, you're so awesome. Well, listen, thank you for the kind words. Best of luck. We'll certainly want to have you back on in the fall, sort of as an update for the campaign. And you know, I want to thank you for your time tonight. Really, you know, you're an inspiration to so many that tune in to the program. And again, congratulations on your placement on the Insider NJ Millennials to Watch. We'll talk to you over the summer, and I do want to get that one-on-one game on at some point. So we got to figure it out.
Absolutely,
and
let's do
it. You know,
I'm serious.
I have a good mid-range jumper. So I'm only 5'9", but don't sleep on me. Don't sleep on me. I can.
All right. Well,
I
might be a little taller than you, so I don't know.
That's okay. But I want to thank you tonight again. You've been great, and I just ask you, please tell all your friends about Politically Direct and. Thanks for being a fan of the show. Have a great night.
Absolutely.
And we'll talk to you.
You're doing a great thing. So thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you, Alyssa. You're a sweetheart. God bless you. Keep up the good work,
right.
Okay?
Yes. Thank you so much. Good night. All right. Bye.
Good night. There, 9:30 exactly on the East Coast. And I'll tell you, a great interview tonight with Alyssa K. Dawson, the councilwoman in Westwood, New Jersey. Great small municipality up there in Bergen County. If you've ever driven by there, Folks, it's a really nice area. I mean, I'll tell you, if I can afford to live there, I would try it. Let me tell you, it's great. If you're not familiar with Westwood, you know, some nearby municipalities include Hillsdale, Old Tappan, Woodcliffe Lake, as well as Emerson and Oradell. So it's right near 17. It's a great, great town. Actually, it's right by Hackensack Golf Club. So if you've had a chance to hit the links there, you know, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. So great show tonight with Alyssa. And again, it's really a testament to her, her transparency on a lot of issues tonight. So I really do applaud her. And again, being a loyal Jet fan, you know, I can certainly, you know, my father, who's a long suffering Jet fan, I can hear the desperation in her voice. I know she's hungry for a winner, as I know many Jet fans are, and we'll see what happens in the 2018 season, folks. And, you know, it's that time of night here. You know, it's amazing how quickly the time goes on this show, ladies and gentlemen. And when you have excellent guests like I did tonight with Alyssa K. Dawson, as well as all the other guests I've had, it makes my job a hell of a lot easier, let me tell you, because it's it can be demanding to try to get good guests on here and to really have a dialogue that's engaging and interesting. And we do that every week here on Politically Direct. So I'm grateful to all my guests. And again, if you missed any part of tonight's broadcast, ladies and gentlemen, you can always go to www.blogtalkradio.com/politicallydirectNJ. You can also go on Insider NJ's website. We have our podcast page there. So definitely click on that. And you can do so from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. If you have a topic or issue you want to hear about next week or any feedback about tonight's broadcast featuring Westwood Councilwoman Alyssa K. Dawson, write to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram @politicallydirectnj. You can also follow me directly @your_favorite_Fernando. Of course, following me on Twitter is greatly appreciated, Professor F. Uribe. Don't forget to like Politically Direct on Facebook. Brand new likes and shares each and every day on all the show's social media. So keep it up, folks. I appreciate your loyalty. And don't forget to check out Insider NJ, ladies and gentlemen, by going to www.insidernj.com for the best coverage of the political scene throughout the state of New Jersey. Once you go on the main page, folks, you just click on the subscribe button. You'll get the morning intelligence briefing delivered conveniently to your inbox each and every morning. It's the best political news, and certainly it's the best journalism you'll come across each and every day, courtesy of the wonderful staff at Insider NJ. It starts with our editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, and certainly all our great columnists and staff that work at Insider NJ. Don't forget to follow them on Twitter, and of course, make sure you like them on Instagram. Make sure you like them on Facebook. 5,000-plus likes and counting, folks, for Insider NJ on Facebook, so do that as soon as you can. And, you know, listen, it's very simple. Don't forget to start your day with Insider NJ. And again, folks, if you missed any part of tonight's broadcast, again, I urge you to check out www.blogtalkradio.com/politicallydirectNJ. Certainly, it is a great resource. The amount of listens each and every week has been tremendous. And again, I'm extremely grateful to the loyal listening audience here that trust me and rely on Politically Direct to be a show that's engaging, that's informative, that's interesting. So I think it's really imperative that, you know, without you, my loyal listening audience, this wouldn't be possible. So again, also check out tonight's episode by going to www.insidernj.com/podcast. Each and every episode of Politically Direct is also on that page. And every episode since we started the show in January is right there for you. So you can tune in from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. And again, you know, whether it's on your morning commute, you're getting a daily workout in, maybe driving down the shore, walking your dog, doing laundry, whatever you're doing this summer, folks, take a minute, take a break, tune in, and you'll be happy that you did. And never forget, ladies and gentlemen, that it's real, it's here, it's Politically Direct. Good night, Westwood, New Jersey. Hey, anyone surprised there? We get to talk to the great councilwoman herself, Alyssa K. Dawson. So good night, Westwood, New Jersey. Folks, again, as the summer progresses, please party responsibly, especially down the shore. Be careful. Cops are everywhere. And again, whether it's checkpoints or just sometimes very bothersome police practices, be careful. Party responsibly. If you can Uber or Lyft it during the summer, please do so. Take mass transit. Don't get behind the wheel if you're not capable of it. You know, the life you save obviously could be your own or someone else's. So please party responsibly as the summer of 2018 continues. And I'll see you here next week, folks, as exclusively here on the show, I'm happy to announce that Miss Elizabeth Meyer, the founder of the New Jersey Women's March, will join us here on Politically Direct. We'll have a lot to talk about the Women's March, not just only in New Jersey, but also on the national level. We'll talk about women's rights and other things in today's political climate. So I'm excited here. So remember, to forget, next Thursday night live at 8 p.m., I'm delighted to have Elizabeth Meyer, the founder of the New Jersey Women's March, here on Blog Talk Radio. So I'll see you next week, folks. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.